Now, I know this applies to many other things as well in our lives, but is missions a human activity or a divine activity? It's both. It is both. That's true. But if it's not an activity in which our dependence is upon Christ and in which the power comes from Christ, then nothing eternal is going to happen. We have to depend upon Christ. The power has to come from Christ or nothing eternal is going to happen. I've given you a copy. I've given you a copy of an email. And in this email, did you all get a copy of this email? I've blacked out who it was to, who's responding. This happens to be from Frontiers missionary. Frontiers, everybody familiar with Frontiers? Okay. It's a mission organization, especially that does church planting among Muslims. An email was written by a team leader to myself and some others because he had gone back into country and had learned that two missionary couples with another organization were leaving. And this was distressing to him because he had been there. This man has been there. He and his wife and his family have been there for, forever, almost. And he was distressed because he said, yeah, he said, there are some missionaries in country who should be leaving, but not these two. And he was raising the question, how do we retain missionaries? How do we keep them? And he wrote to one of his leaders in Frontiers, and it's that leader in Frontiers that replied to him. And I'd just like to look at these five things at the bottom. He said, first of all, we need a heavy emphasis on spiritual vitality. Heavy emphasis on spiritual vitality. Joy in the Lord is attractive. He said, secondly, we need the study and practice of biblical peacemaking and conflict resolution, because one of the biggest stresses among missionaries is team conflict. So we need that emphasis on peacemaking and conflict resolution. Thirdly, keeping a weekly Sabbath, which this Frontiers missionary said, I think is the greatest hedge against burnout. Keeping a weekly Sabbath. Four, strong accountability relationships which encourage probing in personal and family issues. Strong accountability relationships. How many of us here in the States have any strong accountability relationship? I think there's a PCA minister, he might be out here in Maryland someplace, called... he wrote a little booklet called Band of Brothers or something like that. Check Your Six. Yeah, Check Six. That's a very good little booklet, by the way. Your 6 o'clock is your blind spot if you're a pilot. Yeah, it's your blind spot. You got to have somebody else to check your six for you. Okay. So strong accountability relationships, and then cultivation of a biblical sense of call, including theology of suffering. And I want to tell you, I think these are great responses. Now, his last response is especially helpful too. He said, lastly, one other thing I've learned through the years, hot fudge sundaes cure all. There is a very practical element to this as well. But I gave this to you because I would actually like you to just think about these five things here and how you help to, think of them in terms of your own personal life and ministry, but also how you help to cultivate them in others as well. Now, in your handouts, you have a much more lengthy version of what I gave you in that first talk today, which is entitled, How to Pray for Missionaries. It doesn't look like this, but, I mean, not my notes on it here, but How to Pray for Missionaries. I'd encourage you just to work through that sometime when you get an opportunity. I'd like to talk to you now about the generational differences among missionaries. How is the modern missionary candidate different from missionaries of maybe my generation or even the boomers? Now, the boosters, you might want to make a couple of notes on this, and then I've given you a handout, and I'll give you some information to fill in the blanks of the handout. Boosters were those missionaries pre-World War II. There aren't many left. I can think of a few boosters still. Gordon and Beth Taylor. Anybody know Gordon and Beth Taylor? Missionaries to India. They helped start a Reformed church in India. They started the Bhogpur Children's Home. Actually, Gordon's parents started the Bhogpur Children's Home. Gordon grew up in India. And they have about 900 plus kids who live in these homes who come from families whose parents are lepers. And these kids can't continue to live with their parents in their homes because of the high risk that they will catch leprosy. And so parents literally bring their kids to these homes and ask if the homes will take care of them. And so Gordon and Beth did that for years. Gordon was very instrumental in starting the Presbyterian Seminary in Dehradun, India. Gordon and Beth are in their 80s at this point, still making trips back and forth to India during periods of time. And they're the booster generation. They're the ones pre-World War II. Then you got the in-betweeners. That's kind of an unofficial generation. I'm an in-betweener. I'm a child of World War II. The boomers are roughly 1946 to about 1964 or 66. How many of you are boomers? 46 to 64 or 66. Raise your hands again. Okay. The leadership of MTW is boomer. The predominant missionary force in MTW is boomer, though it's fast changing. Then you got the busters. Those are the children of the boomers. And they're about 1964 to 1984, something like that, 64 to 84. And then you got the millennials. Or the boomers are the Generation X also. The millennials are Generation Y or Generation Next. Or, you know, they got a lot of different terms. And they're about 1984 to 2004. And we're starting to see some millennials now, you know, coming into MTW as well. Take your blanks. Take the form that's got the blanks that call millennials, busters, boomers, boosters, characteristics and comparisons. I'm just going to ask you to fill in these blanks. We're going to do this really quickly. You can think about it later. These are generalizations. They may not be as applicable to the Christian community as they are to the secular community, but you'll still, I think, recognize these in the Christian community. You may have different insights from the ones that I'm going to give you. Most of our missionaries, as I said, are boomers, certainly those in leadership, but we're seeing more and more busters. First of all, the millennials, millennial characteristics. The first is they are a large generation. Large generation. Generation Y, they're also called Generation Y, Generation Next, the digital generation. They are three times the busters in size. They're three times larger than the buster generation, Generation X. They are, the next blank, they are diverse. One in three is not Caucasian. One in four lives in a single parent house. Three in four have working moms. Only 7% of the millennials say that they have friends of the same religion that they are. Only 7%. So there's a lot of diversity religiously as well. They are technologically saturated. They start using computers in preschool. They're technologically saturated. It's obvious I'm not that generation, right? I can't even run a PowerPoint effectively. They are more individualistic than the busters, and they're also more religious. 44% would describe themselves as religious, 35% would say they're spiritual, 18% would say that they are neither. Now, when they say they're religious or spiritual, that doesn't mean that they're Christians at all, but they have a real spiritual interest. Buster characteristics. First blank, they're disillusioned. They're disillusioned. They lived with the prospect of nuclear war, the ozone layer, increased crime, things like that. They are the generation of family fragmentation. Family fragmentation, latchkey kids, single parents, blended families, sometimes victims of sex and sexual violence, etc. Thirdly, they are technologically savvy. Technologically savvy, MTV, internet. The next blank, they feel cheated by the boomers. They feel cheated by their parents. They feel relationally forgotten. Next blank, they're honest and open. Honest and open. They tell it like it is. When we have, in the week of Living in Grace, we have one evening where we get all the guys together and we talk about biblical sexual ethics, pornography, the internet, and we talk very openly. And I'm telling you, the busters really talk openly. They are extremely honest. They just tell it like it is. They are peer-oriented. Many busters feel abandoned by their family, so they have a peer orientation. They have a deep longing for spiritual formation, oftentimes because of broken home situations they come out of. They're sensitive and loving. Busters can make excellent team members on a mission team. They want mentoring. They want pastoral care and guidance. And they like to work within a team or group structure. Boomer traits. They are tolerant. That's the first blank. You know, when you think of the boomer generation, you think about tolerance toward abortion, homosexuality, drugs, ethics, etc. Boomers have low institutional loyalty. They have loyalty to people. They have low institutional loyalty. You think back to Vietnam, Watergate, protesting, questioning. Boomers tend to have low institutional loyalty. They are agents of change. Boomers are highly educated and they're specialists, so they see themselves as agents of change. They have a sense of entitlement. They feel entitled to certain things. They don't want just career, they want family and career. They want professional advancement, want good health care, retirement. There's a certain entitlement, sense of entitlement exists. Work and family, both are important, not just work, but work and family. And they want participative management. They want involvement in decision making. And personal and professional development. They want to use their gifts. So, for example, if they were looking at a mission organization, boomers might ask questions. They may not say they're asking these questions, but they might ask questions like, what's the best fit for me? What's the best place for me to be in terms of the use of my gifts and development of my gifts and advancement and that sort of thing? Booster characteristics. Remember, this is the pre-World War II folks that are almost gone at this point. But they're sort of descriptive of my generation as well, the World War II generation, and that is, first blank, hardworking. By the way, the boosters and the in-betweeners are probably the generation that was, as missionaries, the most resistant to pastoral care as missionaries. Why is that? Self-reliant. Strong. Individualistic. Okay. Single-minded, that's the next blank. The second blank, single-minded. These are rugged folks. Third blank, frugal. They live simply. They saved. All those kinds of things. The fourth blank, persevering. They didn't expect things to be quick or easy. So they had a sense of perseverance, and they persevered they persevered in marriage, right? If it was hard, they persevered because they didn't expect it to be perfect or easy. They persevered in their jobs. My dad, who was a laborer in a factory, worked a lot of years for a factory. My wife's father worked 42 years for Chrysler in Detroit before he retired. One company, entire life. How many people today have one job for their whole lives? Some of you younger ones are thinking, what planet did these people come from? One company, one job for their entire life. Committed. Fifthly, they were committed. Go anywhere, do anything. They were committed. If they felt called to do something, they were committed to do it. Institutionally loyal. They were very loyal to institutions, to a church, to a mission, to a marriage, to country, to a job. They were authoritarian. That is, for them, management was authoritarian. It was top down. Tell me what to do, and I'll do it. Finally, they were paternalistic. That is, as you look at the booster generation of missions, expatriates came in, they started the missionary work, and that missionary work stayed in their control until they died. It was not something that the nationals were kind of equal partners in. They tended to be paternalistic more in their style of work. Now, as I said, these are generalizations, but hopefully you might be able to recognize some of the differences. Now, by the way, we didn't get to the slide on missionary retention up here. There's a few slides on missionary retention. We're just going to need to move on from that. You have an outline which I've called generational differences among missionaries. Because I've talked about four generations here, I've talked about five, haven't I? Boosters, that's pre-World War II. They're pretty much out of the picture, though a few remain. In-betweeners, that's my generation, and that would be the World War II babies. And then you've got the boomers. I gave you the years for the boomers. Then you've got the busters, the years for them, and the millennials. Yes. The boomers, what was it, 46 to 64 approximately, somewhere in there. These, huh? The advent of birth control, okay. Generation X is the busters, and that's the one after the boomers. Then Generation Y, or the millennials, or the Generation Next, and that would be the generation after the busters. Now, you've got a very sketchy outline here, generational differences among missionaries, because it's important for you as senders to understand the differences. Some of these differences will be, I think, not so good from the modern missionaries, and some of the differences will be good, be better than the previous generations. The first is the issue of call. The issue of call. It seems to me how would the old booster generation, pre-World War II, or my generation, and even to a large extent the boomers, how did those generations view call, say call to missions? Kind of a mystical revelation, what we might call a mystical call, an internal call. Okay? What else? For life. For life. Very long term, at least, right? What else? It would be, I guess I would just give a third thing that might go along with what Martin was saying. There would be very biblical terminology that would accompany it. This was something that a person had arrived at by virtue of serious consideration of the claims of the lordship of Jesus Christ over his or her life. So it would be in a very biblical context, right? Now, as I listen to the newer missionaries describe call, I'm not hearing as much those kind of mystical or biblical kinds of terms, but I'm hearing more of what I would refer to as a gifts approach to call, or a needs approach to call, or a combination of the two. That is, a person might say, I have become aware in one way or another. I've become aware of very significant needs that exist in this part of the world, in this place in the world. And as I look at those needs, and as I look at my own life, I see certain gifts in my own life that fit that need, that dovetail with that need. And therefore, I would like to go and use my gifts to minister to those needs. Secondly, I'd like to go with a group of people to do it. I don't want to go alone. I'd like to go with a group of people to do it. And thirdly, it's probably going to be a shorter term commitment. So it's a bit more of, and I don't mean these words in a pejorative sense at all, it's a bit more of a pragmatic approach. I'm sort of looking at myself to figure out who I am. That I'm looking at the needs that exist to see if who I am fits the needs. I want to do it with a group of people. I want to dive right in with this group of people, and I want to do it on a more short-term basis. Yes?
Yeah, I'm just raising the question. I think a lot of missionary literature is still focused on that pre-World War II generation. And
good point.
I'm wondering if younger people have this different approach toward the call, and yet there's this expectation developed from reading the literature and stuff that they should have this other type of call, and they don't feel like they have it, and so they kind of say, well, I have these gifts and these needs, and maybe I should use them, but they don't think of that as the call that they're supposed to have. And so that may be part of the thinking that makes it a shorter term proposition, because they're sort of waiting in the back of their minds for the lightning strike, and this call for life, and it doesn't come, and so, you know, I'm just going to try this out.
Which is interesting when you have organizations where leadership is still primarily boomer or even in-betweener, you know, like myself, and you're primarily addressing busters and millennials. So there can be a disconnect, right? Also, another very practical question, how much, what was the possibility of really doing short-term missions or having a short-term mission experience as recently as 15 years ago? There wasn't a lot of opportunity, was there? So opportunity to do short-term missions or have a very short-term mission experience, it's kind of been on the table the last 15 years or so, right? So that's a very significant change that's occurred even in terms of the opportunity. Thirdly, that's really an excellent point you made. Thank you. Thirdly, there's the issue of you as mission leaders in your churches and presbytery, just thinking through both the positives and the negatives of the two approaches, the advantages and the disadvantages of the two approaches. I think it's important to think it through. On the one hand, for example, I think one of the weaknesses of the more pragmatic modern approach is it's not going to carry you through some of the greatest difficulties you're going to experience long term. For example, in a marriage, if you're married, sometimes you may go through such a difficulty in your marriage relationship that the thing that you've got to hold on to is the fact that I made a vow. I made a commitment. God has called me to this marriage. And that right now has to be the foundation that buttresses my commitment, even though my experience, my current experience, seems to speak against that. See what I'm saying? So there's kind of a both and here, I think. There's a both and. And there does need to be that deeper sense of call that needs to be nourished. Now, this means, for example, that the majority today are going short term. They're going short term. They're trying it out. Now, they may be thinking, you know, I want to see how this is going to work. I want to see if this is a fit. I want to see if this is good for me. And they may then re-up for a longer person. But I also want to say I'll get to you in just a second. Also want to say that there's a difference in the way people view short-term and long-term. We recently had a person come to INO who said, I'm here for long-term training. That didn't, nobody on staff, apparently, that didn't compute. And they said, well, how long are you going to the field for? And the person said, 2 years. So do you see the difference of how long-term and short-term are interpreted generationally? Yes. Yeah, and I think within our own limited context, we probably do, and that's why probably some intergenerational conversation is important, so that we both understand one another's perspectives in this. But short-term and long-term are being reinterpreted. Yes?
What about long-term, short-term
mission? I'm sorry?
Professional short-term missionary.
Oh, yeah. the longest short-term missionary term that I'm acquainted with is 9 years. People went out with the old commission project, you know, when the Soviet Union fell apart, and they went with the one-year commitment to commission. They served 9 years. That's the longest short-term that I know. And you can do that sort of in the second career category, okay? Because you've got this whole boomer generation that's getting into pre-retirement, and maybe into retirement they've got really good health still, they've got financial resources, they want to make their lives count for something, and so they start thinking about, okay, what do I want to do with the next 10 years of my life or 20 years of my life? And that's why second career missions has come into play, and second career has that kind of structure to it. Since 2001, we have a part of our organization called Global Training and Development, and Global Training and Development does all the pre-field cross-cultural training before people go overseas. Talk to the guy in charge of that. He said since 2001, when 65, now this is just 2001, this is what, 7 years ago. 2001, 65 to 75% of those coming to pre-field were long-term. What do we mean by long-term? At least a commitment to 1 4-year term. That's, by the way, the way long-term is interpreted. 1 4-year, minimally 1 4-year term. Now, yeah, some of you are giving me looks at this point. For example, we used to talk about career missions. We don't use that term anymore. We talk about long-term and short-term. Do you say, well, do you like that? No. But I'm a dinosaur. You know, what do you expect? I like talking about career missions. But 2001, 65 to 75% of those coming to pre-field were long-term, and only about a quarter to one-third were short-term. Whereas now... what's the percentage now? Well, the percentage has significantly reversed. More than 50% of those coming to pre-field training are now short-term, okay, which would mean about 2 years. So the percentage is just almost reversed. Yes? Total numbers, long-term numbers are relatively flat. Okay, many mission organizations in America are experiencing decline. We are not experiencing decline, but we're experiencing flatness in terms of long term, and pretty flat in terms of 2 year, 2 to 3 year. What we have seen significant growth in is second career and also intern. Intern is, you say, what's intern? Intern is commitment up to 11 months. Now, the thinking in this and the hope in this is that if somebody comes in as an intern, makes the 11-month commitment, Lord is going to help them start thinking about the 2-year, 3-year commitment. They do that, then the Lord is going to start helping them to think about the long-term commitment. But the way into missions today is not like it once was. God's calling me to missions. I've packed my casket. I'm going overseas. It's coming in steps and stages. Also, one of the things that I have to understand about missions is people often today see missions as part of a life plan. Okay, they have a plan for their lives or generally set out goals and plan for their life. Missions is a part of that plan. Okay? Now, God may well get a hold of their lives for missions, you know, and change their thinking, but it's a part of a life plan. For example, a couple goes to missions for 2 years, comes back to the United States, they work on graduate degrees, and then move on to the next step, you know, in terms of the life plan that they have. So it's different. Second, family structure. What's the family structure like for the more modern day missionary candidate who's coming? What's the family of origin that they're coming from? What's the family structure look like? What do you guess today? In the PCA. I mean, this is the pond we fish in, right? What's the family structure look like that candidates are coming from? Give me some ideas. Huh? Many more single parents, yes. Second marriage. So maybe a blended family. Broken homes, yes. Broken families, broken homes. Yes. That's often true as well. The candidate director at MTW told me that it's not at all unusual when he receives applications for missionary service that it will be from a broken home or family situation, and that he is very excited when he receives an application from a candidate who comes from a Christian intact family. A Christian intact family. If you are missional churches in your own communities, that's obviously what you're seeing too, right? Because that's our culture more and more. And if you're really reaching out to your communities, then those are the kind of folks that are coming into your churches. I talked to a teaching elder recently, coming from a divorce situation, and he and his former wife had been restored to the church through a disciplinary process, contacting me and asking me what's the possibility that I could go as a mission to the world missionary. That's a possibility. Now, in his particular situation, because of needs of his children at that point, it didn't seem like a particularly wise possibility, but it was not the broken family that ruled him out, in my mind at least. So that means that maybe a lot of our candidates are not covenant children, or they may have not had a uniform experience as covenant children. They may not have had from early childhood an exposure to missions. It's interesting to me of older Christians, how many older Christians I meet who actually had a childhood call to missions. They felt that in childhood, God was calling them to give their lives to missions and to a particular part of the world. That's the mystical call that was being talked about earlier. I don't think we see that nearly as much. Now, that means also that to the degree that candidates are coming from broken homes, broken families, etc., they may be carrying explicitly more baggage That doesn't mean that just because a family is technically intact, that it was a healthy family. You understand what I'm saying? Or because a marriage was intact, that it was a healthy marriage. But now there's more openly baggage that's often being brought, and the things that come with that. Yes.
Can't that be a positive too?
Yes.
Somebody has been through that experience.
Yes.
They've received the rebuke and accepted, and then go on a mission to it. Hey, they're able to minister to those people, which may be much higher concentration than that.
Absolutely. One of the advantages, one of the de facto advantages is oftentimes a much greater empathy for other people and their journeys and their spiritual journeys. Because a lot of the people in various parts of the world to whom our missionaries are ministering have gone through these experiences, broken family, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what you'll find among more modern, younger missionaries is a much greater empathy and understanding of people in those kinds of situations and a willingness to enter into their journeys and to jump right into the middle of the mess with other people because they too have had similar experiences. That is the positive, exactly. Thirdly, current missionary candidates, often we're finding, now this again may be revealing something about us, as a mission organization and what we test for. But Andy, you're going long-term or short-term? Long-term? Okay. So Andy has taken the MTW Bible test and the MTW theological examination, right? Or you're going to? Okay. Okay. You're teaching elder? Okay. He got off the hook. His wife had to take it, though. I think the Bible test is closed book. The theology exam is open book. Now, what we would find today among the more modern generation of missionaries is they would have maybe less head knowledge of Scripture and maybe of theology as well. Also, maybe less well-defined ministry skills within the somewhat narrow range that we're asking questions. For example, on the application, we would ask questions about, are you sharing your faith? How often are you sharing your faith? Have you ever led anybody else to Jesus Christ? It's not unusual today. Now, that's kind of based upon an older, more confrontive evangelistic model, isn't it? Okay? So you got to look at all these aspects. It's not unusual today for an applicant to say, I'm not sharing my faith. I've never led anybody to Jesus. Which might raise questions about, well, but you're going overseas to do church planting and evangelism. So that would, you know, maybe raise some questions about skill level. Maybe some training needs to take place in skill. For me, the much, much more important question is the passion question. Not only is there skill or lack of it, but is there passion? Which comes out of a love for people. On the other hand, the positive thing about the younger missionary candidates is they are very interested in developing significant and deep relationships with people. And the discussion of spiritual issues and evangelistic opportunities can certainly come out of that, out of those relationships. And also the very positive thing about modern missionary candidates is even though they may be more lacking in head knowledge of theology in the Bible than my generation was, they tend not to want to talk about the Bible. They want to do the Bible. They want to put into practice. They don't want to sit down and have a theological discussion. They particularly don't want to sit down and have a theological argument. But they want to begin to do what the Bible is teaching them to do. And therefore, what you will see is especially an emphasis as they're coming into missionary service on what I would call social and diaconal and mercy ministries. You don't find people coming so much now committed to church planting, evangelism, but you have a lot of people coming committed to mercy ministries, working with people with AIDS, working with street kids, working with, all kinds of maybe disaster relief, things like that, all kinds of things like that. I think that's very positive, too. So you always have a kind of a negative and a positive here, perhaps, as we look at the differences. So what I see in younger missionaries are people who are willing to take some pretty significant risks, who are willing to make great sacrifices, who are willing to submerge themselves in unpleasant and difficult situations and into the messy lives of other people in a pretty empathetic way. So that, the boomer missionary might be part of the PCA because of the PCA's theological convictions. The buster and millennial will not necessarily be part of the PCA because of theological convictions, but because it ministers to needs or because it has a sense of community that really resonates with them. Now, whether you agree or not, is this making sense? What I'm saying? Okay. Fourthly, you see a greater sense of brokenness among busters and millennials than among boomers and my generation in particular. Younger missionaries are more broken. Let me modify that. They appear to be more broken because they're more open about it. Boomers try to hide their brokenness. My generation tended to hide its brokenness. It was not comfortable. It's not comfortable for me to just, let it all hang out, as it were. But it's much more comfortable for busters and millennials to do that. They'll talk openly in a group about their temptations and sins. For example, I said about our Wednesday evening meetings at Living in Grace, when we talk about sexual morality with the guys, and we talk about things like pornography and things like that. They're much more open about it. Busters are much more earthy. They're not as prim and proper as older missionaries. The brokenness can be the result of living through some of the kind of serious difficulties they've lived through, just in terms of things like talked about broken homes, broken marriages, maybe in which many of them grew up. And as a result, not only are they willing to enter more empathetically into the lives of other people, but they're also willing to enter more judgmentally, less judgmentally into the lives of other people. What boomers and my generation may see as a pretty messed up kind of situation, they may see as a much more normal, kind of situation. And so they tend to be less judgmental. I wouldn't also rule out the idea that maybe they jump in rather easily and quickly because of they're making a more short-term commitment. That's also a part of just making a short-term commitment. I have a couple of times I've mentioned the issue of internet pornography, and I'm just going to stop there for a moment and camp on that. One of the most significant reasons for delaying a male missionary in the application process today is internet pornography. And that is not just something that applies to younger guys. This applies to, missionaries who are older as well. And that's the number one reason for delay. As I said, we probed that in the confidential page pretty extensively. Also, when we ask people to delay, if we ask people to get counseling, or if we ask people to even go someplace like Stonegate Ministries out in Colorado, which is really a ministry that specializes in dealing with believers who are getting involved in sexual sin of one sort or another, or we may recommend that something like Covenant Eyes be put on a computer, or something like that. Usually when we delay and ask a missionary candidate to go through a process and they stay accountable to us in that process and then come back, they usually thank us for it. Because if that is an issue in the States for a missionary candidate, it's going to be a huge issue overseas. It's going to be a huge issue overseas, especially when you're dealing with the discouragements of ministry, when you're physically tired, all that kind of stuff, then that's when that will have the greatest likelihood of resurfacing in a very intense way again. And I want to say, too, that's not just a problem among missionary candidates in the PCA. It's a problem in the PCA. And it's a problem in our churches. It's a problem among church leaders. And it's a problem we ought to acknowledge, I think. Fifthly, younger missionary candidates really tend to value mentoring. They really tend to value mentoring. They invite and value mentoring and spiritual care and oversight. I also think this is really important for you as churches to know this, because when missionaries are just beginning the process of getting involved in missionaries, in terms of your responsibility in the screening, the pre-field preparation part, you can be very significant in the formation of missionaries, the younger missionaries, because they value your input. They want your input. If they have respect for you as leaders in the church, they will invite and want your input into their lives in helping them to prepare for going into missionary service. And so this is a very significant place at which you can get involved with them in mentoring them, and they will tend to be pretty open and transparent. It's really the older missionary, the boomer missionary, my generation, and the boomer missionary, or the second career missionary, and as a teaching elder, I hate to say this, but also especially the seminary TE types, who react most strongly against mentoring. Because we think we know it all, you know. It's interesting, I was talking to the people that do pre-field training, and they said that the younger generation of missionaries ask a lot of questions and really think about things carefully, and they'll have very open discussion with you, but they won't fight you. But the boomers and the in-betweeners, they'll fight you. They think you're straying from the truth in some significant way, you know. Just start talking about contextualization, or start introducing some sort of secular model that might have some value for us as Christians, and the boomers and the in-betweeners are going to rise up and fight you over it. I think, and here's what, you know, here's one thing that I see. I think it's the difference between I think sometimes a spiritual issue. It's the difference between having a learner's attitude and not having a learner's attitude. And one of the most important things for missionary service is humility. It's the willingness to put yourself in the posture of saying, I don't know it. In fact, I hardly know anything, and I need to be a learner in this situation. And some of those who have the most difficult time putting themselves into that posture are oftentimes some of the folks going out for second career right now. They're older. They've been very successful in the marketplace in America, and they believe that what has made them successful in the marketplace in America is going to make them successful overseas as well. And I'm not knocking that. Self-confidence, properly understood, can be a good thing. And the experiences, the rich experiences that God gives you in 50 or 60 or 65 years of living, can be very, very valuable and helpful. And yet, one just can't assume that it's going to be like a one-to-one transfer. You know, what worked here is going to work over there. So I think one of the things that's really very good about the younger generation is the level of humility and the learner's attitude. Sixth, world savvy. World savvy. There's more world savvy among younger generation. There's been a greater exposure to cultural diversity. There's a greater cultural inquisitiveness. If you would look at missionaries of my generation or the boomers' generation, we were not terribly culturally inquisitive. We also tended to think, what? That's right. Our way is the only way. And let me sharpen it a bit more. The American way is the only way. We tended to be cultural absolutists in that sense, okay? not so true of younger missionaries, 20s and 30s. They're not so monocultural. They're open to new things. They have a lot of knowledge of the world, which has come to them through the media. But also, a lot of the younger missionaries have already traveled a good bit. You know, they've been to different parts of the world. They may even have gone on very short-term mission trips someplace. Their educational experience has been, even in school, has been much more diverse. I was just out walking around last night. I was put in a hotel over here. I don't know where over here is, but someplace around. And I just got out and walked around last night. I was amazed that, you know, I wasn't amazed. I mean, I'm not some bumpkin, but but just all the cultural diversity in the restaurants. You know, there was Russian gourmet food. There was the Indian restaurant, of course, the Italian, the Mexican, all that kind of stuff, and other restaurants. And I saw all the different people groups, you know, that were out walking around or driving their cars and things like that. There's just a lot more cultural, ethnic diversity that young people are exposed to in America that my generation was not exposed to, and even boomers were not exposed to here in the States. So that's a plus. They may have taken intercultural studies in college and university. You know, as you think about the PCA, and if you were to describe, just in general, these are generalizations, okay, so there'll be some that'll be wrong, but just in generalizations, what would be the PCA slice of the demographic pie? What's it look like, by and large? WASP, okay, a little more specific. White? Huh? Upper middle class? Not so much inner city, not urban. Educated, more traditional, politically, what are we? Republican, conservative. Boring. It sounds boring. It is interesting when you start thinking about the demographic slice of the American pie that the piece, I think there was a song called that, right? One of my favorite songs, in fact. But when you start thinking about that, it's fairly narrow. And then when you start thinking about all the places in the world in which we minister and to which we are called, it's exceedingly different from that, by and large, right? Again, which reminds me, this work of missions must really be dependent upon God, because we are enormously stretched in typically as we move into various kinds of ministry. But actually, the younger generation tends to have a much broader experience than that. Seven, younger missionaries are very team-oriented. They understand categories such as team building and functioning as a member of the team. They may have even gone through little things like the Myers-Briggs profile when they were in school. Those things, I didn't do that till I was well into adulthood. And so they understand some of those distinctions. They understand personality preference. They understand how to work together with people of different personality preference than they do. They're not hierarchical in their view of an organization. They definitely want a team environment, and they definitely want to be heard. Okay, so it's not the top-down authority kind of situation in which they are going to prosper. There may be a couple of things that are slightly in tension here, though I think not as you understand them correctly, but slightly in tension. One, the desire for mentoring, and secondly, is the desire to be heard. But they certainly are much more community-oriented. They're not interested in doing things alone, but as part of a community, as team. In fact, I would say almost there's another word besides team that's more appropriate to describe the expectation of the modern missionary, and that would be family. Now, given the family situation from which many of them have come from, there is a genuine desire to have family. But the downside of that is every missionary goes to the field with certain expectations for team life. You know, I am not a family guy when it comes to team. So I have to make certain adjustments, you know, as a team leader. Because, you know, I have this viewpoint. God gave us a job to do. Everybody's got the job. Go out there and do that job. Yeah, we get together and pray. You know, stuff like that. So I've got to make some adjustment. They're probably going to have to make some adjustment, et cetera. But they have a much stronger expectation for team and family. Eighth, technologically savvy. Recently, we were visiting our daughter in Birmingham. We drove down to Auburn University, where our grandson's going to be going in the fall. My granddaughter, my 13-year-old granddaughter, sat in the back seat during the whole two-hour trip. And what did she do the entire two-hour trip? She texted the entire two-hour trip. She communicated with her friends the entire two-hour trip by texting. They're very technologically savvy. It even has taken over the written word at this point. Ninth, changing values. We kind of describe the traditional PCA demographic a few minutes ago. Now, not just thinking about our demographic, what are our values as a church? What are our values? You tell me. Huh?
Biblical.
And if biblical, that says something about doctrinal, doesn't it? We highly value theology and doctrine. What other values do we have? Sorry? Yeah. Prescriptive worship. Regulative principle. Right? Very definite idea about what's right and wrong in worship. Any other things you think of? Are we a separatist tradition or an inclusivist tradition? We're separatists. I mean, that's our tradition. That's our history. I'm not saying where we're going, what we are today, but that's our history, isn't it? We came out of another denomination. We separated because of very important reasons. Now, you can continue to name values. Okay, what do we value even as a culture most highly, the individual or the community? Individual, that's been our history. You know, and so that affects us when we go places like Asia, for example, where the community is valued much, much more highly than the individual. Now, this is changing in our modern day missionary candidates. They are much more willing to work with other denominations and faith traditions than the older generation of missionaries. They don't approach these other faith traditions from a stance of superiority or separation. Now, by other faith traditions, I'm not talking about giving up truth here, okay? But I'm saying they're willing to come alongside to assist, to help, to make a positive contribution, even to work together where it's appropriate. Maybe the Roman Catholic Church in Latin America. Even recognizing that the Roman Catholic Church in Latin America is a syncretistic body that took certain elements of heathenism, of Indian culture, which, boy, there's an old term, isn't it? Heathenism. But they took certain, you know, and they syncretized them with Christianity and came up with something that wasn't really Christianity. And yet something is going on in Latin America, in the Roman Catholic Church, and there's a greater biblical and spiritual understanding that's taking place. How can we come alongside some of those folks and help them in their journey, even? The younger missionary is much more open to doing that sort of thing. and they often have values that are very different from traditional PCA. You know, to know how some of them might vote in the presidential campaign would be interesting, for example. Or whether they would place exactly the same importance that we have traditionally placed on the issue of abortion, even. Whether they would place exactly the same level of importance on that issue in relationship to other issues like green issues, for example. Would they be the same as I would be in that regard? No. So, you know, you have, all I'm trying to do is point out differences, some of the areas of significant difference that we are certainly seeing as an organization. I think every one of these has a positive to them. I tell you, the younger generation of missionaries have infused a vitality into us as an organization that's really terrific and is great to be around. And I think they have a real desire to serve Christ in a self-sacrificial way. But there are obviously differences, and these are differences that you're experiencing and seeing if you are a missional church, and that you're having to minister to or accommodate in some way or another. But these also create opportunities for you as sending bodies to help, especially on the pre-field end, to help form these people in a way that will be beneficial for their service. Well, I'm 4 minutes over. I need to stop. Yes.
Understanding your statement about the younger generation not being with a hierarchical type of model, nonetheless, every organization needs leadership.
Right.
What do you see now coming up with the younger generation in terms of those who are, yes, they're community oriented, but do you see leaders bubbling up to the top to take the reins?
I do in some cases. I think MTW is still such a boomer organization from the leadership perspective, the highest leadership levels, if I can put it that way, that it's going to take a while for the busters in particular to generate that leadership that's going to, you know, be in place or express itself. So I'm just speaking as to the reality of what it is at this point. I see us still as pretty much a boomer organization. Do I see that potential, and do I see certain examples of busters exercising that leadership or coming into that leadership? Yes, I do. It better happen. Or we will. That's the alternative. That's right. The alternative is not to exist any longer. So I think, it is going to happen. Yeah, I'm going to stop us now because I don't want to cut in your lunch hour, okay?